Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
The Fed holds steady and the dollar takes a dive. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Great to have you here. I'm Joe Kraus, Chief Economic Strategist. Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning.
And CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Yeah, that's a good point, Joe, that the Fed stayed even. In fact, they did not move rates, but that was not the story for the Federal Reserve this week. Clearly, it was that Mr. Trump has nominated Kevin Warsh to succeed Powell, and that's going to be an interesting turn. Lots of people weighing in already, Brian, to say they think it's a good choice, but just give everybody a little bit of a primer of Kevin Warsh and where he has come from.
Yeah, so Kevin Warsh does have a lot of experience. He served on the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve from like 2006 to 2011, so he has experience. He's done all the public speaking. He has the academic credentials. Since then, he has served as an economic advisor, perhaps informally, to President Trump, especially during his first term. He did that. He's been at the Hoover Institution, Stanford University. So, you know, when it comes to looking at like all the credentials, it's like, well, this guy almost was like born to be a Fed chair. I think he was one of the big contenders in 2017 when President Trump made that, I guess, ill-fated decision to nominate Powell instead.
For his thoughts that it was ill-fated. But yeah, Warsh was there, as you said, 06 through 11, and that was obviously right in the middle of the 2008 financial panic. You know, you look at the guy's resume, a lot of degrees from Stanford and Harvard. I mean, the guy is a smart guy, right?
Yeah.
And so, and he worked for Stanley Druckenmiller, so he also knows equity markets as well. So one of the things that's going to be interesting for me is how he handles, we spent so much time talking about interest rates and what the Fed is going to do, and it seems pretty easy. Either you're going to move them, you're not going to move them, you're going to raise them, right?
Yep.
But there's this other part of what the Fed does, and there's two pieces of it. Number one is Fed speak. In other words, all this jawboning that they do, I'm going to be interested to see if that changes, number one. And the second thing that they do is they have a balance sheet. And a lot of people aren't really sure what that means. They read about it, but let's give her like just a minute on what that really means.
Sure. So the balance sheet, if you remember back to the global financial crisis or COVID, they expanded the balance sheet by going out there and buying all sorts of treasury securities, mortgage-backed securities during COVID. They even bought a few corporate bonds. And so that's another one of these policy tools that was typically used in emergency situations. Because when it comes to setting interest rates, you know, there's this overnight federal funds rate that isn't really all that relevant to you and me or even the listener because we don't borrow at that rate. Big banks do. But it does indicate, are they trying to be more accommodative or more restrictive? And then you can think of the balance sheet policy as being like on steroids, right? It's that overnight rate, but then it affects all these other interest rates. He's been very critical of the Fed's use of that balance sheet. And he's not the first one. Others have complained too, saying that, you know what, sometimes that feels like you're tiptoeing into the domain of maybe Congress. If they're going out and buying mortgage-backed securities, that's affecting the housing market. Shouldn't that be up to Congress? And so if the Fed is supposed to just provide general accommodation or restriction, I think his view is that maybe they need to get out of that game a little.
Yeah, so mission creep, and that's one of the things, just probably a term that you're going to hear. By the way, we have not established that he's really a smart guy. You know what he doesn't have, Brian? He doesn't have a PhD in economics.
I know, that's right.
So, you smarter than a fifth grader.
He is.
All right. So, you know, there are a couple of things. The Fed is still going to remain in a predicament. You know, we can talk talk so much about. They overestimated growth. You know, when Obama was in, they underestimated it. When Trump was in, inflation, they missed that entire ship altogether. So they have a difficult position. And so there will be a lot of talk to some nausea, I suspect, about what the Fed is or isn't going to do in mission creep and all of these things. But there was more news that came out this week that is really market moving. Really came out on Friday morning when we saw, you know, there's a CPI report that everyone knows is the Consumer Price Index. There's also the PPI report, which is the Producer's Price Index, and it was way hotter than we thought it was going to be.
It was. It was up 0.5% in December. Now, 0.5% might not sound like much, but if you think about that, it was a one-month move. Typically, we look at these things, you know, maybe 12 months. You multiply that by 12. That's something like 6% inflation, just roughly. Now, most of that was driven by services, specifically with machinery. And in fact, when I dug into the details, it was looking at the wholesale margins that they were making. So it wasn't necessarily goods prices that were driving it. It was more like kind of related to profit margins. When you go from you buy something, it comes in, it goes to a wholesaler and then to the retailer, then to the final user. It was really those margins of the wholesalers that drove that PPI to be hotter. So I'm thinking maybe that's a little bit of noise. When I looked at the actual, like the goods, so the physical stuff that was being bought and sold, that was actually flat in December. So it was market moving, but I'm thinking that this is something that suggests maybe we're past the hump when it comes to a lot of the inflationary impulse that we saw over the last year or so. But of course, time will tell.
Yeah, that's for sure. And of course, you know, when we look at those reports, we always say, what's more importantly, what did food, energy, what's trade? And all of that really goes into the other thing that's very important, which is the GDP report. And, you know, I was pounding the table for a while saying that the Atlanta Fed is going to tell us that we're going to have a 5% plus GDP report. And indeed they did. However, they lowered that to the something with a four handle, which is not bad.
That's 4%. So disappointing. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But there's so much more that goes into it, folks. I mean, and we could spend a lot of time talking about it, but all of it affects your portfolio, not only what the Federal Reserve does, of course, what the economy is doing. We certainly could talk about gold and oil and AI and earnings season, and there's so much to talk about, and we will do that throughout the rest of the hour. But these are the reasons why you have to make sure that all of these pieces are working on your behalf.
And hearing all the latest with our Week in Review may have you thinking about where your portfolio is headed this year. Markets evolve and goals shift. Things we're keeping an eye on here at Annex Wealth Management. Life happens. Let's take a look at strategy that aligns with what matters most to you. One of the ways Annex can help is with our continuing education. It's been a busy month as we wrap up January. Podcasts and radio shows, videos, social media, in-person events. We always love seeing you. Webinars, always with the latest information on the market and keeping you informed. And we do it every week, like this coming Friday. Jobs and the Economic Outlook, that's coming up 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern, how the most recent jobs report might affect you. It's a whole team who has your best interest in mind. You can get connected with those events at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. So when you leave an employer or become eligible for a distribution from your workplace retirement plan, you're faced with a lot of choices, a lot of opportunities, important decisions about what to do with your accumulated savings. Options to consider, maybe leaving the money in your employer's plan, rolling it into a new plan, or moving it into an IRA. And each comes with its own set of rules, advantages, limitations. Understanding how these differences affect investment options, control, fees, distribution flexibility, and beneficiary planning can help you make the choice that best supports your long-term retirement goals. Someone who's seen a lot of this, Tom Parks at Annex Wealth Management, Director of Retirement Plan Services. Hey, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
How much control do you want over your investment choices and your account access when you have all these different plans? You've had a lot of different employers, and how does that compare between your employer's plan and maybe an IRA?
Sure. I would start by saying that you want to have awareness, and that might sound crazy, but a lot of people kind of lose track of old 401ks and stuff like that. Then it gets to your question about like what level of control do you want to have? And that really does vary by person. So I would say, broadly speaking, in an IRA, you're going to have access to more investment options than you would in a 401k plan, because 401ks tend to have, they can be very expansive, you know, menus of investments, but they're still technically, you know, limited. It might be 20 or 30 or something like that. Whereas in an IRA, you can get all sorts of stuff. So really that's going to come down to your personal preference. But the other thing that's going to matter is how much money's in the account, because investments to which you have access also vary by your balance. The more money you have, the more access you have to more complicated stuff. So all of those things are going to factor in. In a workforce that's kind of transient, if you have multiple accounts all over the place, eventually it's going to get kind of hard to keep track of all that stuff. So I generally encourage people, when you leave your employer, bring the money with. Now, the question is, what does that mean? Does it mean I bring it to my new employer, or do I take it to an IRA? And that's where it kind of gets into, it depends on the situation. The other question would be, does my new employer have a 401k? Will they let me roll it in? Usually if they have one, they will. There are thresholds where under $7,000, they can roll you out. Under $1,000, they can cash you out. So you might find yourself in a situation, it's possible, this has actually happened recently, where you have received a disbursement from your old 401k plan, but you're not yet eligible to roll it into the new 401k plan. Then you could run into some deadline issues where you got to do something with that money before there's a different waiting periods where, you know, if you don't do something, it causes you a problem. So every single one of these scenarios is going to vary depending on who you are. Being mindful of it, I think, is the most important part.
You know, what about the fees? Some people say, well, I want everything in one place. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to take it from the old employer and move it to the new employer, but they're not aware of the fees.
Very often people are not aware of those. So I would say, regardless of whether you're moving it from one place or another, Dave Spano always talks about this, know what you own
and why.
What you're paying for. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. There are really heavy disclosure requirements in the 401k world. So there's a way to get the answer, and it's not that hard. So you can find that. To your original question about control, if you're really into investments, you want to have control over the investments, or you're getting closer to retirement, you maybe have a bigger balance and you want some more comprehensive, detailed planning and investment strategy for you personally. Obviously, I would recommend at that point you work with an advisor. You probably don't want to be doing that yourself. That's where the advisor will help you evaluate your options and kind of pick the one that's best for you.
Is right. There always a fee when you roll it over?
There might not be a transaction fee. Usually there's going to be a distribution fee. Oftentimes rolling money in, there's not going to be a transaction fee for just moving the money into the thing. The question is, what are the overall fees once it's in there? Because yes, very rarely will you find an investment company that does all of its work for free. It's just right, a question of, is it in the investment? Is it some other sort of thing?
Those especially when it's not in-house, you might not be as aware of it. And so what level of professional advice or guidance would we look to deciding this?
Right. It's not always super transparent, and it can get complex. Your average person doesn't even know where to start looking. So talk to your advisor to get some help with that. I mean, that's what advisor they're there for, to give you advice on stuff.
And does the beneficiary planning require more flexibility than your current employer plan allows? Maybe you're talking about multiple or contingent beneficiaries.
Usually you can do that in a 401k plan. Sometimes technologically it's more cumbersome at one provider versus another. More and more of the stuff is going online. But if you are married and you're in a marital property state and you're going to designate someone other than your spouse, that usually takes it offline and into some sort of manual process. But I would say, generally speaking, you have the same essential options in a 401k from when it comes to beneficiaries as you might in an individual account. It just, again, comes down to proper planning and then proper execution. And if they are limited for whatever reason, then yeah, you want to keep that in mind. And it's not to say that one is better than another. It's just a question of, what are you doing with that money? How long is it going to be in the thing that you're rolling it into? Because you didn't bring up just take the money out and spend it as an option, Joe, which I'm glad you didn't bring up.
Yeah, I know you don't like that.
That is an option. So we at least need to tell people that most of the time, terrible idea, but it is something you can ponder anyway. Because some companies who hold the money, they are also manufacturers of investments. And so sometimes the fee is just the expense ratio of the investment itself. That's how they collect the fee, by you using their investments, you know, proprietary stuff.
You know, every portfolio tells a story. We say that all the time,
that's
too.
Right.
So it just depends.
Consolidation is a good idea just because it helps you not forget where your money is, but then it gives you a better sense of what you really have.
Yeah, just easier to keep track of. Director of Retirement Plan Services, Tom Parks, happy to walk through that with you at any time. Thanks for being on the show, Tom.
Thank you.
Go to AnnexWealth.com, click that Get Started button.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, we have several in-person events coming to multiple locations over the next few weeks. Everything from single and retirement to saving the family farm. We'll discuss the use of trusts and operating agreements to help create a smooth transition of property from generation to generation. So there are some spots still available for that, and you can still get in. AnnexWealth.com. Just click the events button, and that's also where you can get connected. On Wednesday, February 11th, inflation trends, 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern, the trend in inflation and how the markets and the Fed might respond, and potential paths to navigate our current inflation picture. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson will be on that one as well, as you always are with the Instant Insights, and might be interesting to see with the announcement of the new Fed chair what the reaction is going to be from our current Fed chair.
That's right. And I think that the current Fed chair, Chair Powell, he has been very circumspect about what he says. You know, he's a trained lawyer. He's also a bit of a bureaucrat, and he knows what to say, what not to say. And I'm sure he's not going to say anything negative. There's been this talk about, well, you nominate a Fed chair and you have a current one, does it create this like shadow
yes.
Fed chair where people are going to listen to the nominated guy instead of the sitting one? I honestly don't think there's a lot of daylight between the two of them in terms of where they stand on issues, because Chair Powell, as much as I've criticized him in the past, I do think he is biased towards, let's look at the data, let's think about cutting rates. I think he is prone to doing that. So it's not like it's going to be a radical change. The thing that I'm really looking forward to, though, is I believe with the nominated chair, he has more of a framework for thinking about monetary policy and inflation. It's not just about being, let's react to the data. It's more about being proactive. And I do know that was one of the things that President Trump was talking about when he was interviewing people for the position, is that, you know, in this type of role, monetary policy, you do it today, but it has long-lasting effects that can play out over time. And as a result, we want them to be a little bit more proactive and have that forward-looking view, and not always setting policy just based upon what was the most recent data release or even the trend that has been happening. Because as we've learned, the trend of the economic data can abruptly change.
Not overreacting. Be curious to see. Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist here at Annex, will be watching it. And as we always do with our continuing education, financial planning at every level, Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, and Annex Ignite, 9 total locations. Hey, we got an in-person event, Navigating the Markets, at our Lake Country location in Delafield. That is coming up later in February. Midterm elections, AI, the new Fed chair, lots to talk about there. And also single and retirement at our Brookfield headquarters coming up February 12th at 6 p.m., focusing on some of the financial and life planning challenges for older adults who are single, especially healthcare. Glad you're here with us this morning. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center with Elizabeth Lintonen.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. There's an interesting taxpayer kind of alert. United States Postal Service postmark rules could impact your tax filing. Little notice change in the U.S. Postal Service that could have real consequences. As of Christmas Eve, December 24th last year, the official postmark date now reflects when mail is processed, not when it's dropped off, meaning a return mailed on deadline could still be considered late by the IRS. So why does that matter? Well, small timing errors can mean kind of big dollars.
It really can. There are penalties and there can be interest. Now, granted, if it's like a one day kind of thing, the amount of interest might not be that much, but the penalty can be, because if it's a late postmark, there could be like a 5% per month, 25% of the tax due. I mean, this is really important, especially for people who live in areas where it's not one of those processing and sorting facilities. You can protect yourself against this, though, instead of waiting until the last minute. Now, obviously, we are quite a distance from being last minute, but it's better to be warned of this, is you can go in and request one of those postmark stamps on it. And so that is something they would do. But then, of course, you do need to go during their normal business hours. I recall living fairly close to a post office years ago where people would be driving by and like dropping it off.
I remember that.
Very late at night, you know. So, you know, the postal employees, they did sort it at that point. So they would get the postmarks on there. It's something to be aware of for taxes, but then also other things as far as like mail-in ballots that you might want to do. Postmarks are important there. The property taxes that you pay if you're putting it in the mail, or even if you think of end of year giving, we're past that now, but the rules have changed a little bit and it's important for people to be aware of it.
Very fluid situation. Things that we like to talk about here on Money Talk, and we help you stay organized with Annex Wealth Management. If you do have a question, there is an Ask Annex button right at the top of the page at annexwealth.com. We've gotten lots of questions on taxes, retirement, milestone ages, 529s, the Trump accounts. The answers to all those questions is in quick video form on our social media, and you can talk to us in person too. Someone that has reviewed all kinds of situations and happy to offer guidance. The Get Started button at annexwealth.com is where you can get connected with us along with our client section as well. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management? Well, if you haven't heard, new tax-advantaged investment accounts for children under 18 are being introduced as a way to give kids a strong start and maybe teach them how to save some long-term savings. Similar to IRA accounts, these Trump accounts, that is the actual name, are owned by the child but managed by a parent or guardian until adulthood, with contributions invested for long-term tax-deferred growth. Eligible families can open these accounts, contribute annually, and potentially receive a one-time federal deposit for children born between 2025 and 2028. Those are going to be the important years that we're going to talk about during this segment. And Greg Vidmar, wealth manager at Annex, has been keeping a close eye on this. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Joe.
How do the Trump accounts compare tax-wise and flexibility-wise, because this is something brand new, to existing options like 529 plans or maybe the UTMA accounts that you've talked about?
Yeah, it's a really exciting option to add into. I don't think it's going to really replace, but it's another tool in the tool belt for us to consider when we're saving for kids or even potentially grandkids for the financial plan. So from a flexibility standpoint, it's right in the middle of existing options of the 529 accounts and the custodial UTMA or GTMA accounts, because the 529 is going to be the most restrictive because it's for education purposes. Now, there's a lot of flexibility within what is educational, and they can now be used for 529 contributions with certain limits. Whereas the UTMA custodial accounts, that is the most flexible because that could be used when the child becomes age of majority for whatever they want, whether that's starting a business, vacations, a new car, like there's no restrictions from that.
The kids will like that one.
Yeah, no, they certainly will. So that's where some parents have geared towards those custodial accounts because of the more flexibility, less tax advantageous, because with the 529, it's completely tax-free if it's used for that expense. So the Trump accounts are right in the middle where they have a little bit more flexibility because you can start spending them at age 18 with certain exceptions, and it's a little bit more tax-deferred growth. So it's really right in the middle from a flexibility standpoint.
Kind of personal preference, but there are some big advantages. And what about the investment options that approved financial institutions will offer with these accounts?
Yeah, it'll be very similar to 529s and 401ks, where it's going to be a low-cost index funds where there's a few options that you can select from designed for that long-term growth. Because the idea of these accounts is these are retirement accounts. accounts like IRAs and 401ks, but for your children. So if they're born right now, that's another 60 years towards retirement. So you want to be geared towards long-term growth, and the investment options will be geared towards that.
And the education limitations, if they want to use it for like a private high school before the age of 18, what are the rules and maybe some of the penalties regarding withdrawals before 18?
Yeah, and that's where kind of going back to that flexibility is a little less flexible than a 529 for education accounts. Essentially, these accounts before the age of 18 cannot be touched. There's no exceptions. There's no rules where you can take
no way at all.
You can take money out of it. So really, it's designed from between age 18 and then age 59 and a half. So essentially, again, these accounts are like IRAs. So like Roth IRAs, traditional IRAs, and the fact that there's a penalty if you take money out of it between the ages of 18 and 59 and a half, you'll have that 10% early withdrawal penalty. So they're really technically designed to be like long-term retirement accounts for your kids, but with the exception that you can avoid that 10% early withdrawal penalty for some exemptions that actually already exist for traditional IRAs, like first home purchase, certain higher education expenses, medical expenses. The one thing that needs to be a little bit clarified, but potentially for starting a business, which is not with traditional IRAs, but maybe designed for these Trump accounts.
Might be interesting for some of the private institutions looking 30, 40 years down the road.
Yeah.
They might have higher enrollment or more people trying to get in, and enrollment might be up.
Yeah. The goal here is to really seed retirement funding for kids from day one. And with investing, the earlier you can start, the more compound tax deferred growth you can have, where it might be $1,000 today, but by the time they're 60, you know, you could be looking at pretty sizable account for retirement, and you certainly can't save enough for that. And getting that seed funding started right away, you know, is a very attractive option.
And you mentioned the $1,000. How is eligibility for the one-time $1,000 federal contribution verified, and how is that elected?
Yeah, the actual verification question is to be seen, but you know, I would imagine it's based on birth records and looking at Social Security numbers. But really, to sign up for it right now, there's two ways. It's going to be a tax form where you actually make the election, or you can do it, I think, a little bit more simply online. It's important to distinguish that only one account can be created. Whereas like a 529, you know, mom can have one, grandma can have one. For these Trump accounts, only one person can open the account. So it's very important to talk with your family if you want to start this type of saving for the family and for the grandchild or for the child, because the hierarchy is the guardian, then the parents, then an adult sibling, then the grandparents. So if you're a grandparent out there, you know, looking at this, it's important to know kind of the hierarchy and making sure that kids are opening these accounts for your grandchild and you're not getting in the way, because if multiple accounts are trying to get created, that could cause delays and some confusion.
How might these accounts impact the family's broader financial planning strategies?
Yeah, I think, you know, the accounts are most beneficial to get them started right away and early from an estate planning standpoint. If you're a higher net worth family where you're trying to get more assets out of your estate from a taxable estate perspective, and instead of being taxed at your rates, it's now in their name that's tax deferred. So there's a lot of different tax strategies and estate planning abilities with this new account. And like I mentioned earlier, it's another tool for us to evaluate.
Can be very beneficial. He is Greg Vidmar, wealth manager at Annex. He's going to keep an eye on it for you as Trump accounts get going for kids in your family. Thanks for being on the show, Greg.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Click that Get Started button at annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite, Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, thanks for being here on Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. This is also a podcast on demand as soon as it's over, right at the top of the hour. If you are currently a client or thinking about making the switch, we also have a very active YouTube channel and LinkedIn page. We're always posting new information there for you, a lot of education with the latest financial trends. The Axiom, that is our free weekly e-newsletter at annexwealth.com. You'll always have our week in review video from this show in your email on Sunday morning. You just search Annex Axiom. Other podcasts too, like The Wealthiest, Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America, and the SWOT podcast, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with a new episode first thing Monday morning. Just did one on the possibility of a credit card interest rate cap. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. You know, we talk a lot about what is going into a growth economy, and a big part of that is a growing population of that economy. And last couple of weeks, I've pointed out the fact that there's an anticipation that births and deaths are going to equal each other in the next number of years. And of course, that does not bode well for things that need a population growth like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And so we saw a Census Bureau released their estimates for 2025, and there was some pretty interesting stuff in there, Brian.
There was. We had the slowest growth of the population since COVID. So just for some perspective here, we had from July 1st, 2024 to July 1st, 2025. So that's what they were looking at, this estimate. The population only grew 0.5%, so 0.5%. So it's at roughly 342 million people. So it's still growing, but they attributed this to a historic decline in net international migration, which really shouldn't be too much of a surprise, is that we have seen that. That's been one of the Trump policy goals, is to deal with immigration. But that is showing up then in terms of the number of international migration to the United States. Areas.
And by the way, Brian, I didn't mean to jump in, but it still was a positive number, even though it got cut in half from, I think it was 2.7 to about 1.3. Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's still a positive number. But for example, you look at young folks and the fact that there is less children being born with the reduction in immigration, it is something that has to be paid attention to. And there's some states in there that actually jumped out to you.
There were. I always look at, well, who's the fastest growing and who's shrinking? Like South Carolina, they were the fastest growing. That was fueled by domestic migration, so people moving from one state to another. Other states, they might have had positive population growth, like Wisconsin. There was an increase of 1,000 based upon the actual, like, kind of natural people who lived here, the birth, death. But then we actually did have quite a bit of international migration coming to Wisconsin to increase the growth rate. The area that you saw shrinking might not be much of a surprise. I'm sure there are quite a few high-income individuals. California, that was as far as the biggest decline. You also then had with Hawaii, New Mexico, Vermont, and West Virginia. So really fascinating as far as just the domestic migration, international migration, who's getting the population growth and who's losing.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we talk about all of these disconcerting things that are happening around the world, all the way from Minneapolis to Iran, and there has been this uptick in skepticism on what the economy could look like in 2026. And one of the things that people do when they are concerned is they run to safety. Mm-hmm. And safety, one of the safety trades is buying gold. And gold and silver, my friend, has just been going through a craze.
It's been incredible to watch this. It's almost like a hockey stick, right, to see the price movement. And gold is up, I think last time I looked, it was well above 5,000. Now, it did have a correction or a step lower on Friday. We'll have to see what's going on. And I know that when I'm talking to clients about, you know, what role do like precious metals play in a portfolio, I think it's important to kind of keep that in mind, that broader historical perspective where you can see those ups and those downs. Like some of the motion in gold that I saw was somewhat reminiscent of that big run-up in around 1979 and 1980 before the regime change in Iran. So there was the revolution. And you just saw gold skyrocketing during that period, peaked around like 1980 in terms of with Iran-Contra, you had the hostage situation, but then it didn't go anywhere, especially in inflation-adjusted terms, until around about like 2001. Right. So you can have these periods of time in which it's a rapid run up and then it can be perhaps a disappointing decline after that.
Would it be a bubble?
Well, I mean, arguably, is it? It's hard to say because bubbles are in the eye of the beholder, I think, as far as, is there some sort of fundamental reason for the price to move? You really don't know until after the fact.
And the thing about, guys, is a commodity is what someone's willing to pay for it. When we do valuations of investments in individual companies, we can see what they earned and how much revenue they have, and we can put a multiple on it. Mm-hmm. Commodities, and I'm just not saying gold, but gold, silver, oil, all of those are commodity related. That's, again, what someone is willing to pay for it. And you talked about what was happening in Iran, and as the saying goes, history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. Mm-hmm. And so you can see what was happening in Iran in 1979, 1980, in the hostage situation that I certainly remember. This is happening again because some concerning that there's ships moving over to Iran. And of course, the oil trade is interesting as well. So commodities, again, at the center of a lot of this conversation, and people ask us about them. There is a place when we do asset allocation, Brian, of part of a portfolio, but we're certainly not saying push all chips in on one particular issue.
That's right. And when I'm looking at some of those fundamental forces, the supply and demand for commodities, there's a lot of hoarding going on in China, which I found very fascinating, looking at the price of silver, for example, in Shanghai versus the price of silver in the United States. There is more than like a $5 price difference. You don't oftentimes see that. And it's because a lot of people in China seem to be stocking up on gold. Central banks around the world have been. They've also been stocking up on silver. And the problem with that hoarding mentality, it can really turn. At some point, you know, people turn off the spigot. They get satiated. And then you have to ask, well, what do I do? Especially if you own the physical commodity. That's, I think, the most challenging thing, because it's easy to buy, right? You can go to Costco and purchase things, but what are you going to do if you actually want to sell? That's where you have to consider the transaction costs. Some of the firms that I've been talking to, if you go to like, buy the places, jewelry shops, coin stores, maybe they're only going to give you like 80%.
They don't have to give you the 100%.
No, exactly. There's no guarantee you're going to get that 100% of whatever you see on TV. Maybe they're only going to give you 90% during the good times and 80% when it seems like everybody's now trying to sell.
All right, let's wrap it up. We've got a week ahead with a lot of economic news and a couple of analysis by one Dr. Brian Jacobson as well.
That's right. So we actually are going to be getting a lot of data. It's the first week of the month, so the Institute of Supply Management is coming out with their numbers. But the big thing is probably going to be on Friday when we get the non-farm payrolls number for the month of January. We're going to be having that instant insight where we're going to be talking about what it says and what we think it means for portfolios.
Another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. If you missed some of it, always available in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts. It is available right now on the radio station website as well. Just search Annex Money Talk. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management, and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.